You're listening to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. This is episode number 152, and today we're going to discuss redefining human movement. I'm your host, John Zombro, and I am here with my amazing co-host, PK. Good morning, PK.
Good morning, Jay-Z.
It's indeed that, a nippy one here. It's, I think, upper 30s. We had some light rain in the night, but 'tis the season. Welcome to October, right?
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah, we got a little frost and some rain. It feels right, though. Leaves are starting to hit the ground, and temps are getting cooler, and I think that, we always welcome the change in season around here.
Yeah, exactly. Change in seasons, seasonality. What we try to do here at the Lifetime Athlete is really embody the concept of athletic fitness and maintaining athletic peak performance potential through that entire lifespan. We try to be ancestrally consistent and often refer to the human as a beast. And we beasts should change and flex and flow and optimize how we exist in this natural world. And that's particularly true with the seasons.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yep. And nowhere is it more important, or perhaps it's equally important, thinking about movement, you know, how it relates to our health, our performance. Of course, we always look at other things like sleep and like food, like awareness and relationships, and even what we do at work. But today we're talking about movement. So thank you. Thank you for listening. And thank you, PK, for being with me.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here. And so the episode title is Redefining Human Movement. That's a big swing, man. That's a big thing.
Yeah. And I've got something that's going to come up later where I'm going to address that word yet again, but I think starting off in redefining human movement, or just touching base, I would say this to myself. So I've presented movement as an umbrella, and my question would be to myself, well, what is the umbrella model of movement, and does it still work? Does it still have validity?
Absolutely. So are we going to, when we go through this umbrella, are we sort of looking to define movement or redefine, if you will?
Yeah, I'll jump right in. So movement viewed as an umbrella, it absolutely works for health and for athletics as a descriptor for the types of movement that we human beasts do. And so here's the large umbrella that is movement. And then underneath it, there are two blocks. And those blocks are general daily activity, or GDA, and exercise training, which includes a number of things. And so in exercise training, what we're always talking about, first of all, is when you make your exercise training, it suddenly becomes more valuable, more purposeful, more effective in most cases. And there are five things. We can present those in any order, but we do resistance training, speed training, high intensity repetition training, low intensity steady state training, and dynamic athletic training. So those terms, acronyms for the most part, they've evolved a little bit over time as I've found the words that best fit what they really were. And so some listeners might recognize that evolution. The umbrella works for sure as a descriptor. It also works as a recipe for minimum effective dosages that we humans, might require based on research, roughly to achieve health and high functionality. So for GDA, or general daily activity, we need about an hour a day. Resistance training, a bare minimum, is probably looking at a 10-minute session, or at least 10 minutes under load, performed twice per week. Mm-hmm. Speed training, you need about a minute per week, broken into 5 to 10 second bouts with plenty of rest in between. Mm-hmm. High intensity training, reps. What differentiates reps and intervals is a rep is a work bout, and then the interval is generally considered the rest period between work bouts. And so I like to emphasize what we're doing in the work bout or the rep more so than manipulating the rest period. So you'll hear HIIT, or HIIT, high intensity interval training, or in this case, high intensity repetition training. They're essentially the same, although in my opinion, focusing on the rep is better. So what you need is about, let's say, 6 minutes worth of total reps in a week performed in one session once per week. The reps should be, again, it depends a little bit, but anywhere from 30 seconds to 3 minutes each. And then lastly, we have that that DAT or dynamic athletic training, those things that keep us agile and supple. About 10 minutes a day, every day would probably be fine or great, but we'll take it 6 days per week. And if you do that recipe, you're pretty much ensuring, oh, okay, well, I'm checking most of the boxes. Totals, when we go through all that, it's actually under 3 hours per week that you can blend into practically just a few workouts. And my statement that I tell everyone is this represents kind of an RWA or recommended weekly allowance of movement for health and fitness, but it also forms the base from which an athlete then builds further depending upon his or her specialty.
Got it. Okay. So, and that's 3 hours of exercise training, which we would add to that 1 hour per day of GDA for a total of 10.
Yeah. So we want to definitely see that beast moving 10 out of 168 hours per week, preferably a little more, but again, we got to have some place to start.
Got it. Got it. Okay. So, and we're calling this the umbrella model.
Yes. I've been using that. I want to say it's getting close to 10 years since I sketched that out on a coffee shop napkin. And it's certainly become something that, you know, it's in some of my publications, and it's really a great model with which to communicate with folks about this movement concept.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, if you're a listener of the show or a longtime listener, you've been exposed to this for sure. So none of this is sort of breaking news for, you know, for the tribe, for the community. But the reason that we're laying this out today is because you're thinking, you're marinating on whether or not this needs to be redefined.
Yeah. Or just touch back on, touch base. How has it been working? What are people doing? And I like to be wrong. I like to admit when I'm wrong and share what I've learned and how I think differently. Now, interestingly enough, in this, I don't think I have been wrong, but it's not about me being right. This is about let's actually define things and give messages that can help folks to be
absolutely,
you know, athletic for life. So, you know, just to be sure, but I like to do that. I like to say, well, let's put these things on the block. And it's kind of like hopefully good science, you know, you want to prove yourself less wrong over time. And so anybody whose ego gets too tied up in their model, where suddenly they're not seeing the need for change, that's a problem. That's not an agile-minded beast, and I don't want to be that. So that's why we're here.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that self-check is important, but also I think that we're sort of zooming out, not just under your model, but just what does movement mean broadly, exercise, et cetera, general daily activity, just in the world at large, contrasting your model with that. As well. So, well, let's get into it. Okay. I'm tracking with you. Where are we going next?
So I think the way the model worked and works is we kind of start giving some consideration to the GDA. Mm-hmm. And the question that comes to my mind, you know, based on, let's say, my anecdotal experience and observations, and also what do we get from research, what do we have out there in the activity guidelines for Americans? So there's all these, there's data that we can look at, and it says this, on average, most people are probably not active enough and not getting that minimum hour of GDA per day. Now, this is barring a few exceptions, but again, across our population, we're just not seeing people be active enough, not even talking about exercise training yet. And so one of the things we want to think about is it's that activity that gives us, contributes largely to our circulatory and metabolic health. And that, mm-hmm. and those things could be better across our population. There's no denying that. And then nextly, you know, this comes up often, athletes, you know, the athletes say, well, I'm an athlete. I train, I don't need to like take a walk and do a few chores, whatever. Say, well, actually you do. Athletes receive a unique benefit from GDA. They actually get better and faster recovery from training and competition when that activity is optimized. Now, obviously you could take it too far and you could say, well, what if you train hard in the gym or on the playing field a couple times a day, and now we want you to hike 7 hours, mow the lawn, and do, okay, maybe that's a little excessive, but you get my picture, is that we don't want to just do a workout and then hit the couch. We want to actually keep moving and nourishing that beastly bod.
Yeah So let's talk a little bit about GDA specifically. So when you say, a lot of the folks will, and we're sort of recovering some ground here, but I think it's important. GDA, you just mean moving around, walking, like you mentioned, doing chores. You just how do you define general daily activity?
Yeah, well, how I define it is, it's every movement that we do, obviously when not being stationary, that isn't official exercise training. And so the literature will say, yes, of course, that's things like carrying the groceries in, and it's mopping the floor, it's walking to the mailbox, it's doing those things. It's also what's known as NEAT, or non-exercise activity thermogenesis. So it includes fidgeting. We just want to have our bodies are designed to move, and if they're stationary too long, we have circulatory stasis and metabolic stagnation. And so, that's what general daily activity is. It's just moving in an unofficial or not an exercise capacity. Maybe you're not dressed out for it, but we definitely need a healthy dose of that, shall we say?
Yeah, and I think that. What I find interesting about that is that if you think about it, you're like, oh, I'm moving around. That counts everything from, like vacuuming to just like you said, walking across your house, pacing, folding the laundry, taking it upstairs, these basic daily things. And you're saying that people aren't getting generally an hour of that a day.
Yeah, that seems to be supported by statistics, and also that's my observation. We just need a little bit more movement, and obviously, like riding down the road in a car and seeing things go by feels like movement, but it's not. It doesn't count.
Got it. Okay, so, well, I like what you said there about just how everyone gets those benefits. This is also one of those things where it's just kind of the body's upkeep. Like, you just got to get an hour a day every day, because that's how it works to, sort of get the systems firing on all cylinders. It's not like you can do 2 hours today and then take a couple of days off and then do two more. You don't get the same bennies.
Absolutely. And it just should become one of those ingrained natural, I want to say practice or habit, but even beyond that, it's just something that should be endemic to the beast. We brush teeth, we probably, eat certain foods, or possibly, you have these practices that you do, and really just staying active should be paramount. And that's one of the problems. We live in a society where we can get away, some ways, with not doing that, and that's indeed
Absolutely, especially with the state of affairs in the world, where we're sort of social distancing and maybe sort of staying a little closer to home. I think that that's an important point. So, well, okay, so that makes sense. Maybe I just wanted to linger there a little longer, but let's switch gears and talk about the exercise and training side of things. What are you typically seeing out there in the world, Jay-Z?
I like it that you said linger longer. It's got to be a song. Linger longer. I have no idea, but thank you for hearing that.
Yeah.
Well, let's quickly touch on what training does. So resistance training creates strength and improves lean body mass. So, muscle mass, bone density, that kind of thing. Speed training sprint training develops speed. High intensity repetition develops power, and that can be aerobic power and muscular power. Low intensity steady state builds endurance and fatigue resistance in the beast. And then dynamic athletic training, it builds agility, and that's a combination of mobility, stability, reactivity, and fluidity, supple fluidity, I like to say. So that's what you get when you train. And And here's where I see this, typicality. Most folks will have their one thing, you know, their sport, their practice, their passion, and this is good. Most commonly, you'll see somebody, maybe they're doing an aerobic activity, so that's running or biking. Or they're, if you will, or a self-proclaimed gym rat, so they're lifting. Or they do some yoga. Now, some of these individuals will also do a fraction of the other. So runners will stretch a little. Lifters get some cardio on the rower or the bicycle. Yogis take a walk or a hike. This is a pattern that we see a lot. And this combination, it is, again, it's good, but it results in varying degrees of only developing endurance, strength, and mobility. However, it doesn't adequately address speed, power, and agility, which are absolutely essential to doing these things, making a complete and well-rounded athlete who can achieve peak performance, is versatile, can wake up and pretty much say, I'm going to kick ass at anything I want to do today, is durable, kind of what Taleb's book, Anti-Fragile, talks about quite a bit, and resistant to injury and breakdown, and does not have glaring functional weaknesses.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting. The folks that you describe, I would throw myself at, varying times into that category where you get focused on one thing, especially around here in Montana in the summer, where when we get outside and you can do some of your sports, but what you're essentially saying is that you got to hit on all of the training, all the different training to be that well-rounded athlete. And how does that conversation go? You've coached a lot of folks, you're doing a lot of, you've seen a lot of people in the world. Is that something that's welcome, that idea where, hey, runner, let's add some training and mobility and strength training into it, and et cetera, et cetera?
I think responses are variable. And I want to say it depends on how I sell it, but that's probably not the appropriate phraseology. It's more like, well, let's look at why these things might be valuable and show that need. And when that happens, sure, we get buy-in. And I'm not saying that a person shouldn't do their thing and what they love. All I'm saying is that, hey, let's find a way to shore you up a little bit so that you can either do that thing even a bit better and be able to keep doing it. And that's really what all these messages come together as. So that hopefully I answered that. I didn't mean to rabbit hole you there.
No, absolutely. That's great. So, I mean, actually, if we think about it, we're not redefining. Actually, it seems like what you're doing is re-identifying movement.
Exactly. And that was my intention when we broached that, bro coaches, we broached that topic at the beginning here. I'm not redefining anything. It's already existed. I didn't invent it. I'm just recognizing and classifying, and we are, and so we're re-identifying movement. It's exciting for me. You can hear that in my voice. And as modern humans and in much of, kind of the example that we've been talking about, we often look at everything in a very prescriptive manner. It's like, okay, here's this recipe for movement, do these things. That does exist more than we need to, more than I even like to do, but I think that's the world we live in, and folks benefit from having things laid out that way and sometimes even demand it. But in reality, we just need to recognize that health and life and performance are actually tied to all the types of movement, and we can't really leave any out of the equation. They're basic life skills, just like math and communication and like cooking, driving, problem solving, and moving well the way the beast is genetically designed.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge point that I'm taking away, is that you can't pick and choose. And by you, we're saying one or any sort of beast. This is just the way that we evolved, and this is how things are. So it's not even really a matter of perspective. You're just observing and looking at the science and saying, hey, this is just the way things go.
Yeah, and because the human as a species is unique and variable, we have this diverse genome, I always say this, you definitely should specialize. You know, there's going to be something, at least to some degree, based on your interests and your genetics that you really shine at or really want to do. And I encourage that. That's how we actually get inspired by all the different performers across sport and just, you know, humanity. But we must generalize to a minimum level, or there will be consequences. You know, we don't want weaknesses to rear up and eventually shut us down.
Absolutely. So I guess that begs the question. So what are some, if we take movement broadly, what are some areas of focus then for every lifetime athlete that's listening right now from your perspective, John?
First thing I would say is that movement is an art form, and it is a skill which is meant to be practiced.
Yes, that is, elaborate on that.
Sometimes I think back, going back to that prescriptive model, and we're just looking at, like, you know, getting our units in, we'll think about, okay, I'm just going to do some movement. Now, not to confuse things too much in terms of motivation and momentum, just do it is a great thing to say. And we've talked about that at length here, but also we want to just do things well. And, you know, with, grace and poetic nature whenever possible, and work towards that. It's always going to be a work in progress. And so when we make movement an art form, we are actually improving how our beast works. And so we optimize economy, which is fuel utilization, and we optimize efficiency, which is, power production. And ultimately those things make movement effective. So we get more out of what we do with less wear and tear on the beast, the bod, the machine.
Absolutely. And so what's an example of that? Quick example, moving and being deliberate about that and thinking about a movement as an art form and a skill, something that maybe would be interpreted just as something that you just do, that you don't need to think about or practice.
Here's one that comes up often. It's with running forms. You know, a lot of people think about, well, how should I run? Or you hear this quite a bit. And while there is some debate and some room for variance, I think we can all accept that if a runner is running along with, with reasonably good form, again, within some, broadness of range, they're going to look good. Have less pounding on the body, probably waste less energy. And so that, you know, enhancing running form is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. We also might say, well, let's look at people who are doing, a movement refinement practice, you know, whether that could be yoga or some things related. And so they're thinking about how do I create ownership of shape and position and posture within the body and transition from one of those to another almost seamlessly. And so that's really what we're talking about here. Sure, it looks good. And, you know, the onlooker says, ah, instead of, but also, you know, all jokes aside, man, it feels better and it works better. And anyone who's ever, had an experience where they've enhanced a movement quality, suddenly they realize, oh gosh, well now I can do more quantity of that movement and even, higher outputs of it with seemingly less effort.
Absolutely. And I think that you're right there. If you've been doing something, squatting comes to mind, not only because we did an episode on that, but you and I caught a workout last week where we actually, sort of thought about squatting deliberately. When you're doing it, when you're thinking about that movement as an art form and thinking about the skill, not just pushing the weight, it is rewarding on that very sort of meta level that it just feels right if you get it right, but it's not, but you have to work at it, you know?
Yes. And I feel like I want to say the student becomes the teacher many times because, I study and I learn and I want to share with folks, sure. When I just open up the mind and the eyes and watch a person move, I'll see things. Sometimes I'll see things. Oh, well, this, we might want to tweak this and enhance and improve it. But also it's like, ah, look at that. There's, I see how you're doing this. I think I might know why. And I'm going to remember that and put that in my toolbox because that's going to help me. Or also I could share that with another person. So this whole movement thing, we're in it as a community. And I want to, you know, just kind of bring that up. As you indicated, you know, we were having that bro workout in your awesome garage. I can't wait to do the next one.
Me too. So, okay, well, that, what's another area of focus?
Well, this is one of those, I think it's a cool term, but, you know, movement is our right. I mean, we're made to be mobile beasts. But it is also a responsibility, kind of getting back to a lot of the things we talked about as we look at statistics and health and even those recipes. We really all need to be doing this because it's going to give us, you know, the best life possible. And there are even repercussions to, you know, how that impacts our relationships when you're, you know, an effectively moving individual, that alters how you coexist with your broach in the garage and other things. It also really has profound impact on, let's say, independent living, health, autonomy, healthcare costs within the system. So we really want to make sure that we're all doing what we can for our own quality of life, but also just for society.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's one of those situations where it's good for you, it's good for everyone.
Yep. And maybe my last thing, I need to be briefer sometimes. Movement should be joyous. I mean, it's not a punishment, it's a celebration. And we've got to remind ourselves of that and keep that element of play and spontaneity in there as well. Again, back to being prescriptive. It's like, yeah, but you know what? You can sculpt and shape that prescription to really make it fun for you. And I think that's, you know, I'm often talking about that, that if a person, especially if it's a client of mine, gets bored, that's on me, because it's like, look, we need to find the way that makes this fit, makes fitness fit, you know, makes it work. And it's not that tough to do. Let's do it.
Absolutely. But I think also the a person coming into it, into the training, looking for the joy, you can find it pretty easily. So it takes two to tango there. I think that, you know, you could create the most joyful workout. And if someone's not looking for that, or they're not bringing that in, that mentality in, it's going to be difficult to find. So two-way street there, bud.
I'm loving it. You know, I love the cliches, man. They are so cool.
All right. So let's take her home and say, what are some specific suggestions that you have to make a difference in, you know, in each of our lives? We're listening here. I'm listening. What would you suggest?
Yeah. It's all in how you frame it. And so this whole movement thing, you know, movement is not what you have to do, even though we did say, oh, it's important. It's what you get to do.
Right.
So you know, again, I'm driving that point home. You take me home tonight. And I got to get back to my singing. But movement is definitely beast specific and genetically linked. And so what I mean by that is, first of all, how you move is, you know, basically how you're put together, your joints, your muscles, your connections, your links, all this stuff. And so those dimensions that you have will naturally define how you move to some extent, and those genetic gifts, shall we say, will steer you towards certain sports or exercises that really you know, fit your machine well, and mechanically, you know, they're just a little bit more natural. And so again, maybe I need an example here. You know, the person who looks like the proverbial messenger, that's going to be a person for whom, you know, this whole long distance running thing might be, you know, they might gravitate towards it. And then the person who looks like they can flip cars, whether burning or not, you know, that's probably someone who's going to be in the strength power sport realm a little more naturally, and so forth.
and so forth. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, we've talked about this a lot, but I think that it's just so important, because especially when we go back to what we talked about at the top, this is something that, you know, needs to happen not only on the daily with the GDA, but needs to happen per week. So it is something that's important that there is consistency, that all these different things happen. So if you're looking at yourself as a specific kind of beast, and so your genetic gifts and inclinations, I think those two work really well and complement one another for how to keep it consistently happening.
Yeah, and it keeps this concept keeps moving along. And I would say that movement is also strongly personality driven. And, you know, I mean, obviously when we start talking about personality, you know, we get some theory involved, and folks get some folks get very opinionated or positioned about personality. But like when we did Animal Fits, you know, we talked about, well, okay, there's certainly some theory out there, you know, called neurotyping, which looks at the use of neurotransmitters and how that may actually, you know, guide a person in self-selection of, you know, movement problem-solving strategies, maybe sports. We used the MBTI or the Myers-Briggs inventory to look at personality. You can use any of the other ones. You know, the OCEAN, Ocean, Big Five is popular. Doesn't really matter, but you'll typically find that an individual will gravitate towards the thing that fits the nature of their beast quite best. And we want to promote and encourage that as well, and even, you know, make any of their training aligning with that personality, the model, the preference, the tendencies that they have, because then they're going to enjoy it more and be more consistent and successful.
Absolutely. And I think that also makes sense. I think it makes sense that works. But it also, looking at that point from the opposite perspective, things that just feel like you're grinding rusty gears, you know, for the motivation or something that you don't come back to, it's worth taking a pause and saying, well, does this suit my beast and my personality? I think that there's many different ways to get those, to get that mix of exercise training, as you talked about. And John, that's something that you're really, no, don't deflect here. This is something you are good at. That you're good at sort of finding and prescribing the activities that fit the person that are really dialed in for them individually.
Well, thanks, bro, and I'll take that and run with it, because just forcing things just doesn't work in so many capacities. So, you know, what I like to say is we want to flow. You know, you want to create the flow state with how you do things, with your relationships. You know, so you just got less conflict, more harmony. Only salmon should swim upstream. You know, that's kind of what I like to say. And so, yeah, if I find a person who's frustrated and unsuccessful because they're, you know, they've got a lot of these things mixed up and they're in a forced situation, let's make it more of a flow. And then all of a sudden, man, that's a win. And that's what we all deserve so richly. In fact, if I'm trying to sum up my excitement, my enthusiasm about this topic, I'd say, even though, you know, we talked a little bit about that recipe, you know, clarified movement as the model, looked at the types, looked at some serving suggestions, if you will. But in the end, here it comes. It really matters very little exactly how you move, as long as you have the capacities that we're shooting for, that we want, that we deserve. And those are health, basic health, and then strength, speed, power, endurance, and agility. That's what makes you an athlete for life, and that's what every one of us needs.
I tell you what, I love to hear it. Couldn't agree more.
Oh man, that was fun. And so, you know, PK, you rock. Listener, you rock. And you can find me on Instagram at The Lifetime Athlete. You can find me on Twitter at TLA Coach JZ. John Zombro on LinkedIn, and of course at thelifetimeathlete.com. I am always welcome to get a message, a comment, or a question, and I do respond, may even use it on the show or invite you on this show if you'd like. If you want to support the pod, check out some of the cool merch on the shop page. You can get all sorts of t-shirts with inspirational sayings, books, ebooks, water bottles, hats, you name that. Maybe join T2. T2 is our year-round online training community. You might need to grab some one-on-one coaching to really dial in your personalized peak performance pursuits or tune up your body comp, your health, solve a chronic injury problem. That's what I do in my coaching relationships. And if you love this show, love the messages, share it with the peep, leave us a rating and review. And thank you for letting me go through all of those things. Man, you guys are awesome. Coach Jay-Z out.
Yes, sir.